the Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talmadge, Tony Venus, and Matt Enders as the Beaver.
And we are at episode 92.
Partly cloudy.
I thought it was going to be mostly sunny.
And we're only saying that because we got into a discussion about cloud solutions.
Yes. You know, and cloud, not cloud. What is the cloud?
So. And why completely storing your documents in the cloud is a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea.
It is a bad idea.
In today's modern society, when are you ever not connected?
I'm not. Well, first of all, easy. When I go out to the lake, I'm not collected.
Okay.
Connected.
We're techies. We avoid the sun. We don't go to places like the lake.
That's true. I do avoid the sun, but I'm talking about. I think the cloud is great for as a syncing mechanism to make sure that if I update something on this laptop that. It's updated on my home workstation. And conversely, yesterday when I was working on my home workstation with some stuff for today's show, I was pretty confident that when I plugged in, it would show up here. And it did. But the idea is to keep stuff in sync. And I think that's where the cloud comes in really handy. But to not have it on your system here, I just see that as just something.
Well, I agree. And I agree with Mary that the cloud should be used more of as a backup system. For most things. I mean,
live in the cloud.
If you have a device that's always connected to the cloud, like your cell phone, then I agree that you don't need to have everything right on the device.
Go over to Windsor. Go over to Windsor, Ontario.
Why do I want to go to that socialist country?
Well, Windsor is a city, but...
But it's in Canada.
Right. Take a look at how well... Well, anyway, we won't go down that path, but I'll... What I'm saying is that I was amazed, and I may have mentioned this a few shows ago when we talked about it, when I stepped out of my vehicle after being, no, just kidding. When I was on the riverfront, I had no cell service. I had no cell service. Now, I know I could get cell service if I had the SIM card, or the right, you know, whatever I needed to have, but my point is...
What's your carrier?
Sprint.
Really? My phone just works in Canada.
I thought you couldn't go to Canada.
I used to take my wife over to
I'm
go to the
kidding.
Casino.
Okay.
And then I would sleep in the parking lot in the car while she went in the casino.
You'd sleep in the parking lot?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't like casinos. I didn't go in. Mm-hmm. They have no allure for me. So I would take a book and read, and then I would take a nap. But I had cell service.
Well, then whatever new service they're using, it's just not compatible.
I think it just happened to be where you were standing, that maybe there's buildings in the way or... I have friends that live in Groseal, and that's just across the river from Canada, and they pick up the Canadian towers all the time.
Oh, really?
And they have to, every month, they have to call up their service and say, hey, I wasn't in Canada, don't charge me roaming.
Okay, well, anyway, we spent far too much time on that.
Yeah.
So, okay, so...
What I do last week?
Yeah, wait. Tales from the data center.
Tales from the data center. Last night.
It was a dark, stormy night.
It was a dark and stormy night. No, it wasn't. It was doing an rsync. Okay? I was doing the final rsync where you go out and you shut the machine down. Mm-hmm. You bring them both up to a live environment and you sync everything that was changed.
Okay.
The last time. That's why you have to bring it down so that nobody can make changes while you're doing it.
Right.
Okay.
And, it all went smooth as glass, was great. I swapped the drives out, was great. I thought the machine was going to come right back up. Mm-hmm. Came back up, and it said, do you want to install CentOS 5? Or update CentOS 5? And I'm like, what? Down arrow, stop, don't do anything.
Oh, no.
I don't know what was up with this, because I always do an uptime on it, just... out of curiosity to see how long the server's been up before I take it down.
Yeah.
And it'd been up for 100 days. Okay.
Did you rsync the CD instead of the hard drive?
No.
Okay.
No. So I'm like, what? Why am I getting this? What's going on? So it took me a second to figure out that somebody had left a CentOS 5 install CD in the machine. Oh. I walked around to the front, hit the button, took the disk out,
and then booted, all booted fine. Oh, man.
But my question is, that install disk couldn't have been left in there from the very beginning. Okay? Because it's been, the server's been in service a lot longer than 100 days.
Mm-hmm.
But it's only been up.
And presumably various utilities and things that might run would let you know that there's something in there. Well, kind of like it did for you, no?
No. The only way I found out was when it booted to it.
Huh.
But
well, maybe that was the first reboot.
No, because it's only been 100 days. The machine's been up a lot longer than 100 days. It's been in service a lot longer than 100 days. So my question is, when it was remotely rebooted all those other times it had been rebooted, why did no one... How did it get past the CD?
Well, in the BIOS, maybe somebody... Of course, then why go through all that to... Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. It's a conundrum.
It's a conundrum.
Hmm. All right.
All right.
There was something else, but I forgot what it was now. What was it related to? We talked about it a little bit before we started the show.
I don't know. Tony's snapping his fingers.
No,
I was about ready to tap my foot.
I missed the...
yeah. yeah.
Anyway, no, the mic wasn't working on the Google Hangout again.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, good news is it is. All right, so, hey, Tony.
Should be all set
Oh, wait, Matt's... We're trying to figure out what that other thing was.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was.
Was it the food?
Food.
Yeah, you had a lentils?
No.
Oh, no, that was just...
That was just talk.
Just yeah, okay. Well, all right, we'll move on in the interest of moving on.
All right.
So,
Tony, what did you do?
Yeah.
Last week?
What? Anything related to Linux, open source?
Life. Or? I went through and enabled a couple things on my firewall, like intrusion protection and something else. What did I? I don't know. Oh, I set it up. I set up the DMZ to pass through to it. And, other than that, not much. I mean, I did a lot of non-Linux things.
Mm.
Like we got a trailer for our bike, so
I
we
saw
can
that.
Throw the kids in there.
Good
and
picture. Throw the kids in there. Picture these legs sticking out as they're.
yeah.
No, but yeah, I saw your picture in Google Plus. That was cute.
Yeah, we were going down the road at the time. I had my hand up like this, taking a picture.
Just before the crash.
No crash.
No, it was a cute picture, seriously. Yeah. So yeah, and I did a couple things. I had to do some research this week. I had to go back into United States history and do some research as far as
Before we go any further.
Yeah.
I have to say that I was duped.
Matt has a retraction.
Matt is duped.
I was duped by my ninth grade PA history teacher and my German teacher, all 4 years of high school, who both told me that. So I was duped.
And for anyone who didn't listen to last week's show, we, as part of a discussion, Matt had made the comment that we came one vote away from having German as the official language in the U.S. This is way back in the, late 1700s when the U.S. was being formed. So, you know, I thought to myself, it just seems so odd that they would do that, given the fact that we were an English colony. So I decided to do a little checking, went on Snopes, and there it was. And then I sent an email to Tom Duchesne and said, Tom, here is your chance to get back at that. And Tom said, he said, hey, you're ruining the show for me, or something worse to that effect, because he hadn't listened to it yet.
So I said,
well, hopefully not, or you know, something. Right, so right. I was expecting that sometime this week Tom was going to say...
Tom didn't bust my balls once about it.
I know. I was disappointed. I was disappointed. But anyway, it's one of those little legends that isn't true.
Yeah, but it's popular. Like I found that website that said it's popular amongst the German population of Pennsylvania and German teachers.
Yeah.
And Mr. Heist was my
Look at that last name.
Yeah.
The truth was heisted. No, I'm kidding. Well, he was probably a nice teacher.
I was duped. Anyway. What else from my high school education wasn't true? Pythagorean's theorem, is it real?
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, but that that was one thing I did. And then the other thing I did is, you know, with all the recent discussion about the NSA and your data being, being open for perusal by parties unknown, I went in and did some checking and downloaded Walla, which is a Swiss-based cloud solution. So, cool. And again, it's similar to Dropbox in that you maintain copies of your material here as well as in the cloud. But the big difference is that it's encrypted here before it's sent up. So I'm still, they give you 5 gigs for free, which is, I think, pretty generous. But, although I think most companies now do that. It used to be 2. But I am going to continue to evaluate it. And if all things work well, and also if I can find out that it does work in PCBSD, then I will probably switch from Dropbox to this. So.
Cool. You said also that it's Swiss-based. So.
Yes, it's So you think about those Swiss bank accounts? That's kind of like, but this is a Swiss data account. So.
Speaking of Swiss, though, that reminds me of Germany, even though only a third of Switzerland is in Germany.
Let me write that down. I'll confirm that next week.
Because the other third is French, and then the other third is Italian. And they speak French, Italian, and German in Switzerland. But anyway, depending on which section you're in.
But anyway. I always thought it was just two.
No.
Swiss, French, and German.
No, there's Italian also. Want to bet? I'll bet you on this one.
Yeah, I'll bet you. And when you say they speak, we have to define
they
that.
They speak.
Is it official?
I don't know if there's any official language other than German, so I don't know. But there are three sections in France, in Switzerland.
Three sections?
A German
defined
section.
By what?
Predominantly, the people are German and speak German, French and speak French, and Italian and speak Italian.
Right.
$5.
All right. Yeah, all right. I'll shake you on that. $5. I won't be here next week, but we'll have to wait. I'll be going home today and checking on that.
Okay, I'm sure you will.
But anyway, so that's getting back to what I did. So that's what I did. And, of course, the typical show prep stuff. There will be a distro review this week, so we'll talk about that when the time comes.
But back to Germany, did you hear about Angela Merkel?
No.
Because she met with Obama and scolded Obama about all the NSA spying stuff that was going on.
They're doing their own.
And then they discovered, it came to light that the Germans are actually doing more, because it's very, very much illegal in Germany for the government to spy on you.
Mm.
They don't even have public cameras, but they were doing it all on the internet. And they were collecting more data in Germany than the NSA was here.
Really?
Like, everything that was going on in Germany was being collected.
Jeez.
And I was listening to these German pundits on the BBC last night, and they were talking about how that was going to affect, because their presidential equivalent elections are coming up soon. So Angela Merkel's coming up for election again soon.
Oh, okay.
But they said that she is so far ahead by far that this may hurt her, but it won't.
But not significantly enough to
jeopardize. Right, but she is still going to be reelected. So.
Yeah, my impression of her, I mean, I've not really seen a lot of negative comments about her.
Yeah, because it either comes out two ways. It either comes out she knew and was playing a role.
Or it was in place before she got there.
Or she didn't know and then she's incompetent, is the way the pundits were putting it.
Huh. Well, that's like two negatives. There's two negatives there. Positive.
No positive.
Where it was in place before she became president or chancellor.
Still, she should have known.
You would think that she should have known.
Right.
But sometimes people can keep things from you.
Nah, I think she knew. I think she was playing a role.
I don't think so.
Okay.
All right, well, moving on.
Moving on to Tony giving me another beer.
All right. Another breakfast barley beverage for our friend Matt. And you got your opener over there?
I do.
The
thumb drive.
Thumb drive opener.
Yeah.
Which we'll pass back to Tony now.
Yep. It's 2 beer limit. Okay. There you go.
Oh, that's perfect timing, because spacing or whatever? Because for next week, you'll have 2 for then, too. It'll end up your 6-pack.
It'll be the end of your... Okay. Very good. All right, so let's move on.
Moving on.
Matt, what's happening with the Colonel?
The Colonel news. We don't have a release candidate. Still no release candidate. Not happening. Linus says, F you. Summertime. I'm not giving you a release candidate. No, he didn't say any of that. There's just no release candidate so far. There probably will be one later today because he likes to do it like around 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. I don't know why, but it kind of screws our show up. Mm-hmm. I think he does it just to screw our show up. Anyway. So the main line's at 3.10.
Well, you were mentioned by him.
I was. So the main line remains 3.10. Stable updates on Saturday. Let's try that again without the squeaky voice.
It didn't sound that squeaky.
Oh, it cracked. On Saturday, the 13th of July, 2013, at 10:47 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Hartman released kernel 3.0.86 with 12 files changed, 26 lines inserted, and 10 lines deleted. Then he also, on Saturday, the 13th of July, 2013, at 11:52, Greg Hartman released kernel 3.4.53 with 15 files changed, 27 lines inserted, and 16 lines deleted. And then, on Saturday, the 13th of July, 2013, at 11:54 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Hartman released kernel 3.9.10 with 21 files changed, 94 lines inserted, and 40 lines deleted. And then on Saturday, the 13th of July, 2013, at 11:55 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Hartman released kernel 3.10.1 with 25 files changed, 108 lines inserted, and 57 lines deleted. And my kernel developer quote of the week comes from Greg Crowe-Hartman. The 3.10.1 RC kernel is out for review, and bonus is a rant from me about the patches being submitted for the stable trees. And if you want to read the rant, there'll be a link to the actual LKML, Linux Kernel Mailing List, post with his rant in it, where he yells.
Can you provide a synopsis of it?
He yells at all the developers because he says there's way too many patches for the first RC for these not to have been ready for Linus to pull into it before it was released, and they just waited to bypass Linus looking at their patches.
Okay. Thinking they just
kinda, yeah, yeah.
Well, surprise.
So.
Huh. All right. Well, thanks, Matt. I'm sure that'll prove to be an interesting read.
You're welcome.
For anyone who goes out and reads it.
The numbers will be few.
All right.
That's all the kernel news.
Okay.
All right. It was a short kernel news this week.
Well, we didn't
because there's no release candidate, and that's usually like a two-paragraph thing he says that I read. So.
Yeah, with the...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, with
well,
the code
when
updates.
Do you say the release has been? It's been like, what, Sunday night or Monday?
Yeah, Sunday, late Sunday afternoon is when he usually releases the RC.
So why don't you read the one from
there wasn't
after
one
the
week.
Show? Oh, okay.
Because it was the 10-dot release.
Oh,
or
right.
We could make something up.
All right.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
All right, on the 8th, we have Legacy OS 2.1 Gamer. It's a puppy-based distro, and as you guessed it, it's for PC gaming enthusiasts.
Yes. This is going to be a distro that I will be reviewing this week. And I will say this. It is designed for older hardware, as you could probably surmise from the word legacy in it.
Right. For like Pentium 3s?
Yeah, actually that was one of the hardware computers, or one of the computers that they had mentioned. Yeah, one of the processors. Pentium 3, Pentium 4. It was a trip down memory lane for me.
All right. Cool. Going on, we have, on the 9th, we have SUSE Linux Enterprise 11 Service Pack 3. So this is for both the desktop and the server edition, and it's the service pack update release.
Yep, they implemented, well, you know, the UEFI Secure Boot.
Okay.
They've implemented that in here. It supports it, I should say. And Secure Boot is only supported, according to the information that I gleaned from their site, Secure Boot is only supported on new installations, not upgraded versions. So if you're upgrading from systems older than SLES 11 installations.
Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of makes sense. Why put in the extra code if it's not if you're upgrading an old system, you don't need to have your UEFI, update.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that was kind of interesting is when I was doing some investigating there is that they've got GNOME and KDE, but the KDE version they're running on this, and this just goes to show you, it's enterprise, so it's always lagging behind, is that it's 4.3. Huh. It was updated with Service Pack 1. Now, that was a couple service packs ago. It was updated to 4.3.4.
That's like if you install CentOS and use it as a desktop with the graphical environment, it's GNOME 2.
That's what this is too. Yeah. It's got GNOME 2.28
is what CentOS has.
Exactly. And that was upgraded. This was this enterprise version of SUSE was upgraded to 2.28 when they rolled out SP1. Mm. So only selected packages within that desktop got upgraded for.
And it's only security updates. They don't actually update the packages. Only security updates.
Yeah, so clearly, folks who want cutting-edge desktops will not be...
No.
But this is, again, not designed for
Carl
that.
Carl is the only person I know in the universe that runs CentOS as a desktop.
Carl. Which Carl?
Our Carl.
Okay.
Our friend Carl.
Not your boss, Carl.
No, my boss runs Gentoo.
That's right.
That's right. Okay. All right. Continuing on, we have CloneZilla Live 2.1.2-20, which is the newest stable release of the Live CD for disk cloning.
Yeah,
same. It's an update from... It's a great tool. I've used it.
Yeah, I used to use it a lot. It works really nice.
Yeah, very cool.
Use it with Gparted. You can make an image, and then put a bigger hard drive, put the image on the bigger hard drive, then blow it up to fit on the bigger hard drive.
Yeah.
The issue is if you try
to go in the opposite direction, it causes lots of problems.
Don't ever go in the opposite direction.
Well, no, there's valid reasons to go in the opposite. To go from like a 1 terabyte to a 120 gig.
If you have a lot of open space.
No, if you're going from disk to a SATA drive, or a solid state drive.
Why?
What?
You wouldn't move
much
the whole
faster.
Thing. You wouldn't move the whole thing then.
You would move the OS. It's one, and if you're dealing with Windows, it's one fat partition, 900 gigs.
No, let's just agree to disagree.
Yeah, you could.
No. Anyways, so I had to do that one time, and it caused all sorts of problems.
Yeah, no.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, continuing on.
Yeah, we'll move right along.
On the 10th, there's a new release for IP Fire 2.13 Core 70. And it's a Linux firewall based on... forked off of the IPCOP firewall, and it's what I'm using here. I love it. I haven't upgraded to the Core 70 update, but I plan on doing that this week.
You know, their site has a wish list, and I don't know. Did you take a look at that? They said here. They said currently it's not possible to filter VPN traffic. Do you know if that's true? I mean,
I think you apply a specific.
It's also currently not possible to create groups for services, hosts, or networks, which makes it quite complicated to maintain a huge rule set, which you probably don't need to do because just your place.
Well, they have firewall grouping now.
Okay.
I know that's on the current where you can do like firewall rules groups. I guess it all depends on what grouping you're talking, because they have a lot of different services on there that you can group.
Okay, because they're going to be integrated. It's from on their wish list, I think, putting together a new firewall GUI or GUI is on their wish list. So
that's what they said. The GUI is based on the IP Fire or IPCOP interface, and they said they want to go through and redesign it completely.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Yeah. But what I really wanted to do is IPv6 routing, and it doesn't do that right now.
Okay.
They said mainly because of the GUI. Actually, most of the Linux firewalls, unless you roll your own, does not have IPv6 built into it. I mean, you can run it as a local interface, but not routing or IPv6 tunneling.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's what I wanted. I want to mess with tunneling, but I don't feel like making my own router up.
With all that time you have on your hands.
Right.
So, okay.
All right, continuing on, we have Sparky Linux 3.0.
Sp- barking.
Oh, that's a development.
I know nothing about that.
Well, look for that coming up. Anyways, okay. And then for the last one, we have Linux Mint 15 XFCE edition. And so it's 15 is Olivia, and I'm running the Cinnamon edition.
You know, but one thing I didn't know about them is, well, first of all, they've got this new tool, and maybe it's probably on yours. It's called Mint Sources, also known as Software Sources, which I think came out with the Mint 15.
Yeah. Yep.
And what I didn't realize, it was developed from scratch. It wasn't, I guess, rolled out from an Ubuntu. At least that's what they said. But I didn't know that they're sponsored by Blue Systems, the same group that sponsors Netrunner and I think also Kubuntu now.
Kubuntu, yeah. I didn't know that. That's cool.
I didn't know that either.
Linux Mint? They sponsor Linux Mint?
Yeah. I didn't know that.
The KDE version or the...
The XSE? Or just in general? Mint?
Just in general. I think they're a sponsor.
That's cool.
Yeah, I was impressed with that.
You know, I like that that sources thing you're talking about. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool because it makes an easy way to add PPAs. You can add it through the GUI, where with Ubuntu still, isn't it? You still have to run it or add it through the command line?
No, you can, you can do it that way. But I've also added it through Synaptic.
Okay.
But again, it's not really kind of a custom tool like this Mint tool is.
Yeah.
The other thing I liked, and you've probably seen this, there are some distros, you know, when you need to download updates and other types of things, that you've got a selection of mirrors that they'll evaluate which one is the fastest.
Yeah, fastest mirror.
What I liked about this one is they will show you kind of the degrees of fastness. Hmm. And the picture that I saw from
Who's drinking the beer?
I don't know. When you've been turning the other way, I've been stealing. the Minix Lint.
The Minix Lint.
Oh my God! But anyway, but what they did is they've got the little bar graphs that show you how fast the various repositories are, and I thought that was kind of nice to see because then you can just determine which ones you want to use more specifically. Because I think Chakra or some of the Arch-based distros do that, but they, based on what I recall, they didn't really show that kind of granularity. So I thought it was kind of nice.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah.
I use apt-fast, which probably takes away the fastest mirror thing, but
okay.
Apt-fast goes through and uses, I think, Axel, or there's another one you can use. Mm-hmm. Which does multiple connections to download the same file.
Yeah, because straight up apt has no way to choose the fastest mirror. Apt-get just uses the mirror you tell it to use.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But like Yum automatically uses fast. It's a thing called fastest mirror or fast mirror, and it goes through and checks and finds the fastest one for you and uses that one.
Yeah, that's cool. A nice feature.
Yeah.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
At number 5, we have Midnight BSD.
And 14, 12? Oh, you
that's
the
right.
Let's try that again.
That's all right. Yeah, 14.12.
And trending up.
And number 4, we have Ubuntu with 14.72.
And trending down.
At number what?
4.
Down. I don't know if I've ever seen it that low on a 7-day list.
I hope it drops all the way off the top 5.
Ooh. And number
Somebody's
3, we have Fedora.
Over there.
We have Fedora with 15.41.
And trending down.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that, man.
And trending down. I do have some news on that front.
Ah.
All right.
All right, in the number 2 spot, we have Debian. With 16.49.
And trending down.
And in the number 1 spot is Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 33.36.
And trending up. I might be changing the distribution on my personal laptop, not my work laptop. My
ooh.
Really?
Yeah.
What? I'm really restraining myself. I want to break out and just bust out in laughter, but I won't. But no, seriously though, why? Is it just too cutting edge?
No. I like the cutting edge. I like when shit breaks. That's fun for me.
Oh my God, but not for me, because a few of them breaks and I'm trying to do something.
But.
Well, answer this question first, Matt. Are you going to stay with an RPM-based distro?
No.
Oh, Debian-based?
No.
Slackware?
Maybe.
Really?
You're kidding.
No. I've been listening to Tom Duchesne.
Well, there's your problem.
And he talked all this good smack about his Slackware install, so I'm thinking about giving it a try. Especially you got KDE 4.10 installed on it last night.
I got 4.10.5 installed.
That's what I think he installed, something like 4.10 something is all what right. he installed.
Well, that's interesting.
So
cool.
Well, keep us posted, because you know I've been threatening to go BSD on you.
I know.
With this, and you know, I kind of took a look to see what I have on here, because you know I don't. Because
you wouldn't be able to when you go from Linux distro to Linux distro, you can keep your home partition and just blow the distro away and reinstall whatever you want to install.
Right.
But going to BSD, you can't do that.
No, and that's okay, because this is not my main computer. My main computer is at home, and that is going to stay on Linux for now. But I think it would be fun to put this on BSD, PCBSD, because it's a 64-bit computer. It'd give me an opportunity to try out, is it ZFS?
ZFS.
Somebody was pronouncing it ZFS.
Probably most Brits. Probably a European who.
No, yeah. It sounded like he had an American accent.
Really?
But yeah. But anyway, but it would give me an opportunity to try that particular file system. I just think it would be, an interesting experience.
Might have been Canadian. Canadians are Zetters also.
Oh, yeah, you know, you're right. ZFS. So anyway, but
a lot of those Canadians are BSDers.
Are great people.
They're BSDers.
I'm not surprised, because at BSD Can, I mean, that sounded like a great convention that I missed. So next year.
Where was it this year?
I think Montreal Ottawa. Either Montreal or Ottawa.
Where is it?
I think
next
Montreal.
Year?
You know, I don't know. I'm going to find out, and I'm going.
Because 2 years ago, I believe it was out in somewhere in Calgary, I think.
Oh, okay. So. It would be great if it were in Toronto.
I know. Toronto's only 4 hours.
I know. Yeah. So anyway, but so much for that. Okay, so, what do we have next?
What distro are you reviewing this week, Mary?
And this week's review is of Legacy OS 2 Gamer Edition. Never have I seen so much stuff.
You do not sound happy, Mary.
Oh, I don't?
No.
Am I tipping my hand? Never have I seen so much stuff jammed into one location, except maybe the time I saw Matt attempt to consume a 20-scoop ice cream dessert at Ohio Linux Fest last year. Remember that schooner, Matt?
Yes. Yes, I do.
I've got pictures. Of course, 2 months later, we know the rest of the story. So, good thing you're not doing that
anymore.
Nothing
to do with that.
Oh, my God.
nothing to do with that.
Yeah. So
well,
anyway.
How did sugar hang around for 2 months?
Yeah.
It just added up. This week's review is of a Linux distro I would actually call Kitchen Sink OS. It has everything. You want to play videos, it has 5 different tools for that. You want to play CDs, there are 3 different tools. Need a file manager, there are 4. Yes,
wow.
Including Dolphin.
Oh, man.
3 different options to organize your life? Yes, there are.
Did you say bloatware?
No. What's interesting is that it all fits on a CD. I know. And that's what really intrigued me, and I thought, I want to take a look at this. And you know something's up along these lines when Amarok, the main KDE audio player, is listed in the miscellaneous menu rather than audio. I'm thinking, wow. So would Legacy OS be a retro cool gamer's paradise, or should Duke Nukem take his trusty Devastator and tenderize this dog of a distro? We'll see. All right, first.
Hey, bonus points for the Duke Nukem reference.
All right. Well, you know, it's funny because I wanted to find, I'm not that, I mean, I know who Duke Nukem is in general, right. But I wanted to identify a really good weapon of his, so I went and I Googled that, and so there was this one called the Devastator.
I know, I thought you just knew it, Mary. I was real impressed. You should have kept quiet.
Oh, shoot. Okay, I suppose half of my point gets taken away, right? All right, so, okay, first the vitals. The name, of course, is Legacy OS 2.1 Gamer Edition. I found out that Legacy OS used to be known as Teen Pup. The maintainer is John Van Gans. The distro's latest birthday was on July 8th, 2013, per DistroWatch, and it's a derivative, of course, of Puppy Linux. Now, the kernel, I ran uname space-a, and the kernel that's running on this is 2.6.18. I know, Matt's got an interesting expression on his face. I know, and that is my take, too. I was really... Wow. But keep in mind,
but
though,
it is for legacy hardware.
And that's why.
Is that kernel still supported? Is that a long-term kernel? Is that like the kernel that's in Red Hat and CentOS? And...
The 2.6 is out there, but I'm not sure 2.6.1.
Like, CentOS is on a 2.6 kernel, but I don't know 2.6 what.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but it was kind of old. And the review desktop is ICE-WM, Ice Window Manager. And I think we already talked about that it's based, the Legacy OS is designed for older computers. We talked about the Pentium 4, 3, blah, blah, blah. Now, the boot process to go live allows you to supply particular boot parameters, and Legacy OS lists them for you. So there's the various typical parameters you see when you're going to boot up. It also goes through a keyboard and screen resolution process before you are booted to the live environment. And I'm happy to say that I apparently passed both of those, and that was good. Now, when it completes, I was presented with a nice-looking ICE-WM desktop. A single panel at the bottom holds all the typical icons, including a quick launch menu that actually takes 2 clicks to launch anything.
Quick launch.
So
is it double click, or you have to click and then click on something else?
Exactly, because a quick launch menu for me would show you the icon.
A single click the icon and boom,
you're gone.
You go,
yeah. But this quick launch icon. Yeah, I'm having problems this morning. is really you, just an.
You smell burning toast. You smell burning toast, Mary.
No.
Okay.
Wait a minute. No. No, I don't. Is that a sign of some medical emergency?
I have a stroke, yeah.
Oh, but my nose is plugged. Just kidding. But anyway, so it's 2 clicks to launch it. I thought, well, that's kind of not too good. But anyway, the defaults. Here we go. Browser. The two default browsers are Opera and Conqueror. Now, according to the maintainer, SeaMonkey...
Popular top-of-the-line browsers.
I like Opera.
I use Opera regularly.
It's good. Now, according to the maintainer, SeaMonkey, Firefox, Google Chrome, and others are no longer compatible with Legacy OS. And so they gave a little shout-out to Opera because, despite the fact that Opera is a modern browser, it has maintained its backward compatibility with older systems. And so that's why they...
Do you know why?
No.
Because if you look at almost any mobile browser, it's Opera-based.
Ah, okay.
Because Opera builds them, like Samsung or whoever goes to Opera and says, we need a browser, and then Opera says, okay, here's your browser.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Most phones identify as an Opera.
I'm going to write that down and check. No, I'm just kidding.
You can do that. Tony can verify that for me.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then if Tony says it's
right, the older ones, I mean, there's some of the newer ones, or if you specifically install... Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know, chosen
can,
one that's
with
gonna
so my, now you can install other stuff.
Yeah, but, including right. Opera Mini.
The default web browser for Android is Opera, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's called Internet.
It's called Internet. Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that. So thanks for that information, Matt and Tony. All right, the Office Suite, there isn't one, but Numeric and Abbey Word are there. There is no mail client that I could see. And again, I went checking.
Silfeed?
No, it wasn't there. If it's there, it was not in the menus. Hmm. So I went looking for it.
Why do you need to make Word docs and read email if you're playing games?
My thoughts exactly. All right, and the file manager. As I said earlier, there were four. You've got Conker, which, of course, you can run as a file manager. There's Roxfiler. There's Dolphin. And Crusader. Now, that's right. This distro has some KDE stuff added. I went in and took a look. It's KDE 3.5.4. Now, that is retro.
Oh.
Yeah. So, now we're going to go on to the install process. Now, the installer was tucked away in Applications Setup, Install Remaster, Legacy OS to Hard Drive Installer. Now, there are other options that are available. You can remaster to
life. Is there an icon on the desktop that says Install to Hard Drive?
No.
Really?
Yeah, and that was a little disappointing, but you really have to go in and
dig. All the puppies I've ever used had a icon right on the desktop that said install the hard drive.
There are a lot of distros that do, but this is one of them that didn't. You had to go in and you had to dig it out. But they give you, there's some other options too, because you can also install to USB, you can remaster the ISO, just a number of things. Now the install kicks off by starting two tools. The first one is called Mutt. Now not Mutt as in Mutt the...
mail client.
Yeah, the mail client. This is MUT. It's Media Utility Tool, which essentially manages the mounting of media and partitions on your system. Initially, there was a bit of confusion associated with this tool. I was under the impression that my CD already was mounted simply because it was running. It was spinning and it had uploaded. But apparently, in this environment, it wasn't. The second tool that was started was Gparted. I also was instructed to make sure the install media was inserted, and it was because I just left it in there. I mean, it loaded it to RAM, and I just left the media in the CD drive or CD-ROM tray. There are several options for install. Oh, I'm sorry, I just ran over that. The first time I installed, it warned me by asking if I wanted to install Legacy OS 2 in super floppy mode. With no master boot record, no MBR, and no partitions. Now, the downside to a super floppy install is that it contained no boot partitions, so it's impossible to boot from the device. I was thinking to myself, why would you want to do this unless there's something going on with you've got an older drive, and maybe it doesn't have some of this capability, because then what you'd have to do is insert a USB drive and use that to kind of jumpstart your...
Yeah.
So it was pretty odd.
Unless you're running it as a dual mount or a dual boot, and you don't want it to overwrite your MBR.
Yes, and I tried to install this.
That would only work if you're dual booting a Linux or something else using Grub.
Right, because Grub will go through and find it.
Right, but if you're not using Grub, it's not going to find anything. I don't think Grub will even find this. Because you said there's no boot partition. It doesn't.
Well, there's two options. This is just one.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you use this option, it's got no boot partition at all, right? It's got no bootability.
Not from...
Well,
from
it doesn't have to have a separate boot partition. It'll still find it.
I'm thinking there's no kernel. Well, no, there has to be.
No, there was a kernel. No, there are three. Yeah, there were three files that were installed. One of them was the kernel. One is initrd. And then the puppy... the puppy SFS file that contains the puppy system files and all the other material software.
That's kind of weird.
Well, believe me, I tried installing it at least three different times in different modes because, as you could probably surmise from my description here, I had problems. Or the system had problems. And again, this could simply be hardware related because the hardware or the laptop that I used was the Dell laptop that has 2 gigs of RAM. Mm-hmm. It's got the 80 gigabyte hard drive.
Yep.
And it's relatively modern, but the fact that I could run it with absolutely no problems from a live CD, nice graphics and everything, and then bork so completely when I attempted to install several times was mystifying to me.
It was too new.
Well, yeah.
It's a dual core processor.
Well, yeah, then, maybe I needed to select something from the options that were provided during the initial boot menu that pops up, let me just continue. There was one of my installs where super floppy was my only option. What I later discovered is that the Mutt utility that opens up, I had not mounted the CD-ROM driver, or excuse me, the CD-ROM. Even though it appeared that it was mounted because it was spinning and taking things off it. But apparently, according to the install, it wasn't available. So I had to click I had to click mount for that, and then I made sure that the hard drive on the system was also mounted. I had to click mount for that. Once I did that, then some of the problems I have, some of the problems I was having went away.
Uh-huh.
But here's the thing. There are numerous windows that pop up telling you things that are not really clear. The information wasn't really clear to me. And because I've installed dozens and dozens of distros, and most often I'm successful in that and provide, I think, a cogent review of the activities that I've undertaken. Here, it was just very difficult to get through it. And again, I'm contrasting that problem with the fact that in the live environment, it ran very well, and it had a lot of cool stuff. I mean, games, it has, I would say, probably over 80 games on it, and they're divided into five main categories. You've got puzzle games, you've got mind games, arcade games, those kinds of things. And so when you go into those particular menu categories, then you're presented with multiple game opportunities and software. But anyway, so the other problem I had with the install, too, is that when I got far enough where I could actually select that I wanted to install it to SDA, it then asked me or told me at one point I had to then reformat my hard drive to either EX. Yeah, it was like it was going back, and it wanted me to go back in time. And I had run gparted up right. front, because once I installed, or I set up two partitions. I set up about 79 gigs for legacy OS, and then I set about a gig or a little less. I mean, it was, you know, a small amount for the swap.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's what they had recommended. And once I did that, I didn't go back and touch it at all, even though on the numerous install attempts, it presented gparted. So it was a little challenging. Now, I ultimately did get it installed, and it was this morning at about 4:30 in the morning that I went back, because I was changing different things, trying to see what I could do to make it install. Because, as I think I mentioned earlier, any attempt by me to either reboot or shut the computer down led nowhere. It led to a black screen that was kind of backlit, so I could tell that something was going on, but it was clearly invisible to me.
What if you tried to drop out to another terminal?
No, I didn't do that, Matt, but when I get home, I may try that just to see what happens if I'm able to shut it down from the command line, because there was nothing there for me to do from that perspective. So, again, it was extremely disappointing. Let's see here. So, as I noted at the top of the review, Legacy OS 2 contains... Oh, by the way, too, when I rebooted after I installed it, after I successfully installed it, it presented me with a grub menu. I thought, I'm finally going to get in. I didn't have to select anything. I just let the default run because it was going to go into it. And the wallpaper flashed. The screen went black. All right, so... as I noted at the top of the review, Legacy OS 2 contains, you know, a ton of games. I tried Pac-Man. It worked great. Again, that was in the live environment. My rating is has a Jekyll Hyde aspect to it. For the benign Dr. Jekyll's live environment, it was very nice and well laid out. The live CD was jam-packed with stuff. It was amazing that so much stuff was crammed onto a single CD. You really have a lot of options here. Again, I give it a 2.8 from that perspective. For the install process, crafted by the insane Mr. Hyde... It had to be one of the worst ones I've ever witnessed.
Insane, Mr. Hyde.
It had to be the worst ones I've ever witnessed. I tried at least three times to get Legacy OS 2 to install properly and almost thought I had it, but to no avail. But actually, after I wrote that, I tried one more time and I did succeed. Perhaps it was my Dell laptop, but the disorganized plethora of Windows dialog boxes that popped up makes Legacy OS confusing for anyone new to Linux and frustrated for the rest of us. So I gave it.
It just sounds like it's a bad deal.
Yeah, it's,
like they need. It doesn't sound like the installer's polished at all.
No, right? No, and I, you know, again, just judging it from the live,
which is very unusual.
Very nice, but
the other puppies I've installed.
Well, me too.
Are real slick. I'm
Saluki,
very surprised.
I think was the last one that I reviewed, and that was over a year ago, and it was. I believe my review was overall very nicely.
Yeah, it's always been a no-brainer.
Complimentary to it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this one was tough. You know, again, I suspect it's if they get that part straightened out, and maybe I need to install it on older hardware. I just don't have any. So that's my review of Legacy OS 2 Gamer Edition. Go get them, Duke.
All right.
Okay. Whew, that was a lot of work.
Cool. Thank you, Mary.
Hey, you're welcome.
Yeah, that is a lot of work, and we appreciate every time you get to do it.
Oh, I didn't say that, but thanks. I wasn't fishing for a compliment, but thank you. But I mean, it was just the work. It was, it was just frustrating.
Right.
That one of those installs where you want to get a hammer. Mm-hmm. One of those hammer installs.
And if it were morning, yeah. Okay.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
The first is hit-and-run driver kills Seth Vidal.
Ooh.
Seth Vidal, the amazing man who brought us Yum and Fedora, was run down by a hit-and-run driver on July 8th. He will be sorely missed, but he will live on in his contributions. For more information, use Google and see these. An excellent eulogy by his friend Konstantin, and I'm going to butcher this last name, Ryabitsev. And then there's the Red Hat announcement about it, and then his official obituary.
When did
this
happen?
On July 8th, Friday.
July 8th, okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. From the
Friday.
From what I read about it,
it was Monday.
I'm sorry?
It was Monday.
Monday?
Yeah.
Okay. Sometime mm-hmm. previous from today.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. I my week's all screwed up because like last night was my Monday. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. But anyway. Yeah, they said it, the one eyewitness account, the lady that saw it happen said it seemed like it was almost on purpose. It was almost intentional. Because of the way the driver slowed down and then veered away from and then mm-hmm. back right into him. Mm-hmm. I mean, turned straight into him, so.
It sounds like the person was texting or something and veered and then didn't realize what's going on.
Yeah, I have no idea. Mm.
Wow.
I saw an update on there that the person turned themselves in.
Did they?
Yeah.
Then they were probably drunk. Because you run and then you turn yourself in later if you're drunk so you don't get the DUI added on top of it. But mm-hmm. it's vehicular manslaughter now, so the DUI is not going to really mean much at that point.
Right.
Wow, that's terrible.
So, and on that somber note, we then go on to lighter news with a small Linux gadget delivers practically unlimited storage. The device, called Simply Plug, is about 10.6 inches by 4.3 inches by 0.79 inches. They set a goal of $69,000, but after their first 24 hours of being on Kickstarter, they had raised $118,000, almost doubling their goal in one day. The small plug device forgoes cloud storage for a local approach, where a driver installed on each computer or mobile device that you wish to have access to the drive or drives intercepts file system accesses and redirects the data reads and writes to drives attached to the user's plug device. The plug does not rely on any cloud-based storage services. It gives the user complete control of all storage devices. It is planned to work even across the internet. This is what their Kickstarter page said. When plug is installed on your computer, our application intercepts all the input-output operations performed on your files using several patent-pending technologies.
Patent-pending?
Patent-pending.
And sends it directly to the NSA for review.
The plug uses OpenWRT-based Linux distribution using an unnamed x86-based processor. It includes a USB 2.0 port and a 10100 Ethernet port, averaging a transfer rate of 30 megabits per second. All those pledging $69 will receive a unit. However, the retail pricing is estimated at $150.
It does look very cool, and the virtually unlimited space is however many hard drives you want to plug into
right.
it, and it does support multiple hard drives. So you put a little USB hub on there, and then you can put like 5 2-terabyte drives, and you've got 10 terabytes.
Chain 20 hubs together, and then you can put 1,000 drives on.
Well, you're actually limited to 128.
Well, you're limited to 365
devices. Oh, wow. Then it's not unlimited. Get it right, Matt.
Yeah, that's the news I have.
No, it does look really cool. I'm thinking about getting one.
Well, that sounds like my Tomito plug server. that I have.
Except it doesn't rely on any web-based, anything outside of your control it doesn't rely on.
Well, no, and what's the coolest part about it is the software that comes with it.
Tonido, unless I'm misunderstanding, nice. Tonido, I can access it on my network and it doesn't go out anywhere if I don't want to.
Right. No, and it's the same.
But I can also access it via the internet when I'm not at home.
You can force access via SSH or whatever other ability they give you. But this will do it automatically. You'll see it on all your devices as a drive.
So it's using WebDAV or something?
All the time. It's using WebDAV? Something proprietary that they're not saying.
It's probably SSH would make sense to me.
Right.
If it was running over SSH. Makes.
But they say it's compatible with Windows.
Yeah,
NTFS file system.
You have to use their software, so they can SSH connection into that. It doesn't have to be, native to the OS.
I mean, it sounds like from the technology used here, it sounds great, but
it does.
Yeah, but to your point, Mary, is that the biggest difference is it has a software that makes that connection for you to save all your files
automatically.
So it's like sync.
It's like Dropbox. You know how Dropbox, when you're working on files, syncs and then.
Yep, exactly. I use that.
But this doesn't sync. It actually just read and write.
It actually just writes to the drive.
It's more like WebDAV. You're saying, it's more like WebDAV or an SSHFS connection.
Or my Google Drive.
Right.
It's more like my Google Drive.
Except for it's your own cloud storage.
Okay. Right. I see.
And then you open up some ports on your firewall, and you can get to it from anywhere out. You're out in the internet.
Yeah, because you interact with Tonido in the inner tubes, interwebs. you interact with Tonido via web browser, for the most part. So it's
does Tonido allow WebDAV connections or?
That, I'm going to go SSH take a FS look connections? Because I've got one at home, and I just bought another one because I was gonna. I haven't even used it yet. I don't know why I bought it.
Sounds kind of like the Raspberry Pi.
Yeah. It's sitting out there. Yeah, I know.
Mary likes to buy toys.
I know. And if I had time, I'd use them. So, but
one day you'll retire.
I know.
I don't know
next
if it's retiring. I think it's these distro reviews that take
over. That's right. But anyway, so it's... I'll check that out because Tonido has... They've got some nice capability. It has some nice capability. I really like it for playing my music because I can play my music anywhere.
Yeah.
Right now, I don't think I have it set up to access it from the outside of my home network. But when I did have that set up, it was wonderful because I could be thousands of miles away and play my own music. It's very nice. So.
That is cool.
All right.
The plug also has something like DLNA, where your TV can connect to it.
Oh. Yeah.
This plug?
And play,
Oh, that's nice.
So, if you have a smart TV, then it'll play through all your stuff.
And they make those new thumb drives that'll make any TV you can connect a thumb drive to into a smart TV.
I've got that. That was an Android. Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Oh, did you get one of those?
Yeah, I did.
That's cool.
And I had upstairs, but I'm thinking of moving it downstairs. And it has a little wireless remote that you can... change, you can basically interact with your Android operating system on your TV, so, all right. Okay, so, Matt, that's, I think, I guess I use my Pi, excellent, it is hooked up to it. You know, I was thinking of, I've got a full-size Dell that is my media center right now, plugged into my TV, and I'm thinking about pulling that off, putting FreeNAS on it, just as an experiment, and then replacing it with a Raspberry Pi, for my TV with a 1 terabyte drive, or is it do I have 500 gig? I can't remember. And using that as my media center, so maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'll have something to report next week.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
In our they're talking about different things. Dowdle and Ken Fallon, they're talking about using the RPi, or the Pi for different things. They use it all the time. Our stream that we do, our audio stream, is running over the Pi right now, too.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So, thanks for your news. Wow, that news article. Or what? I don't know. It sort of generated some discussion there.
Yeah, the plug.
The plug.
The cloud,
that's very cool.
Partly cloudy.
The partly cloudy.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I was going to bring that up, but Matt said, hands off.
Yeah, he did. And he looked very threatening, so we just said, okay, Matt. No, it made for an interesting discussion.
Yeah.
So, Tony, do you got anything today? Or?
I was going to talk about the plug.
No problem.
I won't tell you that I finished writing that story at 7 o'clock this morning.
Okay. I won't. Don't tell us that. Actually, I've got a couple of things. There was one article that was on OSTatic.com, however you want to pronounce that.
OSTactic.
OSTactic. No, it's OS. Well, if it were tactic, it would be TACTIC.
It's not?
No.
That's the way I've always read it.
OSTactic. Exactly. That's my point. It's like Linux, was it Linux BS?
Linux BS DOS. Yeah, BS DOS, that was it.
Linux BS DOS. But anyway, I thought this article was kind of interesting from the perspective of reviews don't matter. Linux reviews don't matter.
Oh.
I laugh because really it's this author's premise that they're just the sum, and it's true, they're just the sum experience of the reviewer's experience coupled with any biases, preferences, that type of thing. I think there are times, though, when...
Not you, Mary. You are completely objective every time.
Yeah, you're being a... All right. Yeah, thank you.
No, I am sure, knowing you personally, that you attempt to be as 100% objective as possible.
Oh, I try to. I mean, I try to... I look at it from
that
what...
you make a conscious effort to mm-hmm. be objectionable.
I try to. Objectionable.
That's not what I meant.
You notice how he slid that right in.
But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no,
I'm sure a lot of reviewers don't do that, and they are tainted by their biases. So.
Well, I thought it was interesting to see that after I kind of
lambasted the legacy.
Yeah, but anyway, I'll have a link to that in the show notes. The other thing that I noticed, and this was I believe from July 11th, this was put out by The Guardian, and that was the Microsoft NSA collaboration. And how apparently Microsoft had provided the encryption keys to the NSA. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I can't even say what I was thinking to myself, but it was, there'll be a link to that article. And again, that was from The Guardian. Let's see here. Also from OSTatic, was the fact that the LibreOffice 4.0 manuals have been published. So there are manuals for all the various components in that software suite. I have a link to that, which I think is really good, especially for people that are migrating from other office suites and want to take a look at it.
Hmm.
I came across on the, you ready, Matt? 1, 2, 3, Unix Men.
I didn't know what we were doing, man. You got to give me the heads up.
Yeah, I know.
I'm like, where's she going with this? What are we going to do?
Yeah. But anyway, they had the article, and this has actually been ongoing for several months, but Arch Linux, you know, they're reorganizing the files, the Linux file system, but the file system as maintained on their distro, and are taking user sbin and then sbin, and they're moving it into the user directory.
Yeah, Fedora did that, and Red Hat's going that way. Mm-hmm. They took sbin and moved it into user sbin, and they took bin and moved it into user bin.
Yeah, well, I think that Arch is going a slightly different route, where they're just going to have user bin and user libs, and they've taken the sbin and put it into user bin, I believe, based on what I saw in the article. I went out to the Arch Linux site, too, took a look around, and I think anybody who follows Arch knows this has been an ongoing discussion, and these plans have been in the works for a while, and they said that
I was really torqued off by it when they first announced it, but now I'm like...
Well, I think when you look at how the original file system was put together, I mean, hardware was a lot different in those days, so I think they're kind of trying to make it, well, simplify may not be the right word to use, but I think they're trying to streamline it. And so it makes sense to me. So I just wanted to put that most recent take on it. And I think that if you do get any errors, they had some information for you as far as how to take care of it. So there's that. I've got a little link to a Anybody who uses PHP MyAdmin to administer MySQL databases may not be aware that there's another tool out there called AdMiner, A-D-M-I-N-E-R. Hmm. And I'm going to have a link to that. What I found kind of comical about this, and it may be a really workable tool, I installed it, and it's installed through apt-get and probably through the package manager of your choice that you use. But what was kind of comical about it is that out on the website, if you take a look, they did a comparison between PHP MyAdmin and AdMiner. And looking at it straight on, you would think, who on earth would ever use PHP MyAdmin? Because they just, it was like it was practically unusable based on this comparison that this company, this group put together.
We use PHP Admin at work all the time.
PHP MyAdmin.
Yeah,
I like it.
Our control panel, InnerWorks, mm-hmm. when you click on the link in InnerWorks to manage your databases,
it opens that.
It opens
right?
PHP MyAdmin.
Yeah. Well, and so does
cPanel does the same thing.
Yeah, do they?
And
yeah.
so does 1&1. I mean, I kind of grew up on that, cut my teeth on it, and I've used it to export, import. I've run SQL queries in it. I found it to be pretty useful. I think the only item that sometimes got in the way was I think the upload limit. You're limited to a certain number of megabytes, and so you either have to go in there and change it, or you've got to split your file, or you've got to do some things to get around that. But again, this was really seeing their list, and then they said, but to be fair, let's show the items that PHP MyAdmin where they're the stronger of the two. And they had two little things listed. And this other page with all the stuff where AdMiner was apparently superior, I mean, it was like a page and a half. It was a ton of stuff. It was comical because it reminds me of the studies that Microsoft writes about.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's those PCO studies. That's what it reminded me of. Now, I'm not saying that AdMiner is not good, but I got to go in. I went in and tried to install it and then tried to bring it up in the browser, going to, not localhost, but going to, 127.0.0.1. And I couldn't get it to go. Now, I suspect...
Did you go to the right port? Because it runs on its own port.
Yeah, I didn't see that information available, but I need to go back and check that. But I couldn't get it to come up yet.
Because like our control panel at work runs on 2443... And there's some.
But PHP MyAdmin, you don't have to do that.
Backup software that runs on port 8001.
Right, but PHP MyAdmin, you do not have to specify a port. You just have to forward slash.
Well, it's
PHP.
Because your Apache is doing a forward or
right.
a redirect.
Oh, okay.
And in Apache, it's.
It's not set for that. Maybe.
Right.
Maybe that's part of it.
Most likely, yeah. If it's not part of Apache, like MySQL, it works with Apache. Most likely, Matt is right where you have to put in a port number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll go back and check that out because that may be it. But again, I was looking at the instructions right from the site, and they said to put this, to go to this address, and it didn't have a port listed, so that kind of took it right from there. But I'll do some further checking.
What did the address end in?
It was a forward slash. And then I went into 127.0.1.1. Let me just see here.
No, it should have been after the 127.0.0.1.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know what? I bet you something had to be rebooted or something had to be restarted. Or maybe I didn't have Apache running at the time, but I thought I did because I grepped it. It's asking me to log in. It's up and running.
Yeah, all right.
So there's going to be a link to this tool in the show notes. I haven't evaluated it yet, but I am going to do some checking, and I'll report on it next week. Oh, no, in 2 weeks. I won't be here next week. Moving on to the KDE corner, I've got a few things, a couple quick things.
Okay.
Can you get out of the document?
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. KDE corner, here's what we got, a few items. There was a whole host of Dolphin bugs recently fixed, and there are a lot of them are things that you might not see during normal use, but one of them caught my eye because I think I'd experienced it, and that's Dolphin freezes or hangs when copying large files. So that was one of the bugs that was fixed. There'll be a link to that information. You can check that out if you're interested.
Cool.
Also, released this past week was Octopi 0.1.9. Now, that's the front end for Pac-Man. And, of course, that's based on the Qt Libs framework. It's compatible, of course, with Arch Linux, Manjaro, and Chakra. So that's out and available. Also released was Silicon, which is a KDE CD DVD software tool. There you go. I should try that again, but I won't. Anyway, but it's a set of open source tools to manage and organize your optical discs, Blu-rays, and I went and installed it, and it's really kind of nice because it allows you to mount them as ISOs and do a bunch of different things. Little tool. And then, the last one is Amarok Apollo Web UI 1.0, and this allows you, it's actually a remote control application for Amarok so that you can run it in your phone. So there's some continuing development work on that front being done, but I wanted to just mention that. It's a script, and it apparently uses a modern web interface, so whatever that means. And the last thing I want to mention is that Alex Fiestas, who's one of the KDE developers, and he's one of the four guys that does the KDE Tea Time, and they have not had a podcast for like 3 months. He is suggesting, or he proposed, a KDE release every 3 months. So he said...
they do it every 6 months right now?
Yeah, so he thought that... He just threw that out there, and they're going to be discussing it at Academy, which actually started yesterday.
3 months isn't enough development time. I think it's a little ridiculous to go to a three-month release schedule.
Well, I think they're going to change...
Four beer parties.
Tony, you're the practical guy. You are right. That's right. And by the way, on the way here, you know, I'm taking Interstate 94.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed. Westbound, you see that big billboard that says Drink Michigan Beer?
No, I didn't.
Oh, my God. No.
Where is it at? Because I get on at Pelham, and then I get off here.
It's...
At Middlebelt.
It is just before the exit. Had I westbound.
The one I see right as I get off on that exit is the one for that lawyer lady.
Oh, no. But anyway, it says Drink Michigan Beer. And had I known it, seen it a little earlier, I would have pulled over, taken a picture of it.
Oh, that's cool.
It's great. So, but anyway, that was kind of fun. So that's it. So there'll be some links to all those items in the show notes.
Cool.
All right.
One thing I did want to talk about is how everybody's been complaining about how the Google Reader's gone away.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the alternatives I've been told is something similar. It's not a replacement.
Feedly, That's
one I had heard about, but I haven't messed with it.
Do you know what I say?
But
bah humbug.
Oh, that's okay.
Bah humbug.
That's why it's gone away because nobody really cares.
Who needs an RSS reader? And they did a study, and this is why Google Reader got rid of it. Almost no one uses an RSS reader. I have a list of websites I go to and I check regularly, and I go to them and I check them regularly. And that's what most people do. They don't get an RSS feed.
Right. I think it's mainly the tech journalists, people that want to keep up on the news.
Yeah.
And want it easily.
Like me. Oh, that was great, Tony.
But no, he's right. It's for journalists. Mostly the users they found were just journalists. And
for people who have news segments in their podcasts.
Right, but I don't do that. I just got a list of like 15 websites I go to, and I just check them all.
You don't think it'd be easier to have them all listed in one big
bah humbug.
List?
Oh, go ahead. Tony. Continue, because this is your story. I'll interject later.
What
or
I found,
now, like I just did.
What I started messing with is something called...
Wait till Tony starts talking.
Prismatic. Yeah, exactly. I think we should continue that. That's the best way to go. Interjecting. No. All right. So I'm using prismatic.com. And when I first started messing with it, I couldn't find a way to be able to choose like what subjects you wanted to. It just like presents you with a bunch of stuff. And it does like self-learning and figures out what you like and what you... So the only thing that I saw was interesting was coffee and DIY projects. So now it thinks everything I like is coffee and DIY. But in the middle of the show, what I was doing, I went back to the site and looked at it, and there's a search button.
You can control what you see.
Yeah, so okay. I went through and added a couple more in, and it's pretty cool. It's brought up a lot of stuff that I think is interesting. And the website is getprismatic.com. I'll put the link in the show notes. So it's not a exact... I say it's not a replacement because It doesn't, you don't choose the specific sites that you want to read everything from. It goes through and figures out what you you like and what you don't like. Mm-hmm. And has a whole system where you can hook it up to your Google Plus and your Facebook and your Twitter. And so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, but I am diametrically opposed to Matt's take on RSS feeds. Well, not your take. I mean, you're entitled to your take. But as far as being able to cycle through a bunch of things, I have got... I've got probably 20 to 30 different sites here that I get their RSS feed.
Stuff will be, my site, the sites I go to,
I get a list of headlines. The stuff I can go up here, and if I want to search for something, now, and for everybody who's listening to the podcast, audio-wise.
You're using a client, so you're not. It's not web-based. It's a program installed on your computer.
Yeah, using exactly. Aggregator. Yep, it's the KDE-based one. And what I really like about it is that, you know, again, I can scan here and I see, oh, there's a CentOS TopStar Web Services poll. Huh, that might be something to talk about.
Yeah, I read that. It was
or graphs in Python. Oh, I'm not going to talk about that. But anyway, I don't have to go to any site. I just get them all here.
Right there. Yeah.
And then if I want to read it, I can click on it. Yeah. And my podcasts, all my podcasts come in here, too.
Yeah, I think that's the best thing about RSS, is that you can have all your podcasts coming in. Otherwise, I'd have to go to every single podcast I want to listen to.
No, mm-hmm.
Well, it's still, it's RSS
I use it in
reader.
Aggregator. It's all in one. It's podcast and I'm just telling you. But anyway, so so I guess that's that.
Yeah.
Matt's so, quiet over there.
Have you guys heard of any other web-based ones that may be interesting?
Well, I think I mentioned Feedly. I didn't really like the layout because I like Google Reader where it would just list the topic or the subject line, and then you could go through. And I had some things, what is it, Lifera? Is another one.
I've heard of that, too, yeah.
That looks okay. Oh, RSS Owl. That is, when you install RSS Owl, it installs several hundred RSS feeds organized by category. Now, I get rid of all the, you know, the crappy ones that I don't like, and I keep the science ones, I keep the technology ones, the some politics and news ones I keep. But RSS Owl is really a nice one to check out,
that's
too.
That's something you install on your PC? It's not a web-based?
Yeah, it's an app that you install.
That's cool.
Now, actually, and I think it's... I think they have a Linux client.
You know what I did like about Reader, Google Reader, is that you could sync it between devices.
Yes.
And one of the podcatchers I was using used Google Reader as your list.
Oh, really?
So I could set up like three different, like my tablet, my phone, and something else to all, and it all reads off of that same list.
Service go to now?
I don't know. I actually don't use it that much.
But they were freaking out when they found out.
Right.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I think it was BeyondPod.
Okay.
This is the one I was using, so I'm not sure what it's doing now. Because I haven't really listened to on that much. I've been using my laptop to listen to podcasts. Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, and actually RSS Owl, I just did check it. There is a Linux client for it, so pretty slick. I like that one too, and it's open source.
Very
and it's
cool.
Built on Eclipse, the Eclipse framework, for what that's worth.
All right. Well, I think we've come to the end of our news section, right?
I believe so.
I believe we have.
Tools from the toolbox.
That's right. And actually, the tool this week came from one of our listeners.
It did.
And
it sounds like a really cool tool, and I'm so disappointed that I could not try this tool out.
Yet.
Because aren't you switching?
Oh, maybe. Yeah. I might. That's a might. I'm really thinking about it. So.
Okay. But anyway, and I think we had talked about Scrot a couple of weeks ago, and I think Matt's big problem with it is that you need an Xterm in order to run it.
Right.
Because we were looking at terminal screen casting tools.
Yeah.
And Scrot needed the Xterm, but who I think it was Keith who sent it to us that told us that told us of TTY Rack.
I don't remember who it was.
Oh, and I'm so sorry.
Was it our French Canadian Guillaume? Was it?
Yeah, might have.
I think so.
That could very well be it.
Yeah, I'll have to look it up. No, I don't see it right now.
All right, but anyway, so this came to us from one of our listeners, and a couple weeks ago, I installed it pretty quickly, and had a chance to test it out, and I really liked it. Again, it's TTY REC or TTY Rec.
For record,
and what it does is it will take when you once you start running it, it opens up and it actually creates a file by default unless you specify, called TTY Record. So all of the actions you take in the terminal go into this file, and you again can I did LS. I just did some stuff just to get it going. And when I went back and played it, I believe you play it with TTY Play, it will then just show you the shell. It will just show you the environment and every action that you took. And you do not need to have an Xterm running to see it because it's completely terminal-based. It's very nice. And according to the man page, it invokes a shell and it records the session until the shell exits. And as I said earlier, it's TTY Play. I think I mentioned that.
Right.
So, If you wanted to go into a file other than TTY Record, which is the default file name, then you just simply specify it when you start. So.
Yeah, you know, it is. It was Guillaume that he was telling us about it. But yeah, I've messed with TTY Rec also, and it works both in Xterm and in your standard terminal. So you don't have to have X running,
right? And there was a very helpful YouTube video, a tutorial on it that I found when I was doing some research on it, and so I'll be sure to include a link to that in the show notes.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's very cool. And using this, it's not like you're trying to make a script and it actually records your command and then replays those commands. It actually records everything that the terminal does. And replays what it does. So if you, and the way I tested that is I just did an LS in the folder I was. And then I moved and I stopped the recording. I moved to a different folder and then played that back and it said LS. And it actually displayed previously what I did, not what was in my current folder. So it's good and you can send that from system to system and it doesn't have requirements of files or libraries or whatever that's on your system just to show somebody else what you did.
How do they play it back on another system unless they have TTY Rec installed?
Yeah, that's installed, but if you're running commands on your PC and you want to show somebody else those commands that you ran, then they don't have to have those commands or programs installed.
No, they just...
Like if you want to show somebody how to configure Apache, you can have it installed on your computer, send them the TTY Rec, and it goes through in every step that you did, and it shows them. And they don't have to have Apache installed on their PC.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, very, very nice.
I really wanted to try this out. This sounds really cool. And the fact that it works from the actual command line, like you don't even have to have X installed on the machine at all.
Exactly.
Is really, so really appealing to me.
Yeah, so...
But I had that libpnp conflict where it required that older version of libpnp, and I wasn't willing to give up my VLC.
Yeah, well, you know, running cutting-edge distros sometimes are not all cracked up to be.
Hey, with any distro, you could be as cutting-edge as you want to be. It just takes more work.
That's true. So, anyway, but that's our tool this week. It's very slick.
Yeah,
thanks, Guillaume, for sending it to us. And that YouTube link will be in the show notes. I got to dig it out from a couple weeks ago. Because we've known about this for a little while.
Very cool. All
right. And
what's up next?
Well, normally it would be, is it alive? But it's not alive this week.
Yes, Mary the Slacker.
Sure.
Well, it was at distro. I was a little frustrated, so I couldn't
that's fine.
Prepare anything. Yeah. So. All right, and there won't be one next week because I won't be here.
Yeah.
But you'll be fine. And I guess we're now moving on to...
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line, and that number is 313-626-9140.
Well, the first thing that came up on my list is that Alexander from Germany says it's okay for us to put his name on the website.
Yes.
Yep. Yep. He said, he donated. Go ahead. Thank you so much.
Yeah, he's our friend.
Mm-hmm.
What else do we have?
And we had something from...
Sir Eagle?
Sir Eagle, yep. I was just
going to
say
gave us his name and said we can use his name instead of calling him Sir Eagle.
Yep.
His what did he say?
Eagle.
His name is...
Yark.
Is... And I just middle-clicked an opera, and I forgot that doesn't work so well. So now I've got to go back.
All right. Oh, no.
So.
It's Eagle Bjarkel?
Yes. That mm-hmm. sounds correct. Yes, Eagle Bjarkel.
Yep, and I think he was talking, he did some testing in Fedora 19, KDE, yes. on his multi-boot USB disk.
Yeah, yeah. And
you inspired him, Matt.
I inspired him.
You're an inspirational guy.
I inspired him to switch to Fedora, and now I'm going to Slackware.
Oh, that's right. It would be, yeah. Oh, you should be able to do the TTY record on a Slackware-based distro.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tony, here's my prediction. I predict, although Matt will probably not do it just so I would... I'm not going to bet on this, but I predict that you will be off Slackware within 6 months.
Only because it will be too hard to stay cutting edge, and I like that. I like the new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why I used to run SID in Debian, because that was all the brand new, fresh, spanking new stuff.
Yeah, it makes sense. I just think that there's going to be some stuff about it that you're not going to like. It's just my idea.
Yeah.
Okay. There was another. We had another email from
one from Brad. Is that what you're talking about? From
no, Brad. I was just saying that one? We have been added to Linux Links, but that was from today, this morning. That one.
Oh yeah.
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 That, I've got
our
that too.
Show. Yeah.
Linux
yeah. Link. Talking about our the shows and different podcasts and how he had accidentally left us off, or previously left us off.
Yep.
All right.
And I have another two others from Sir Eagle.
Do you?
Yes.
The Google Plus posts?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Or he mentions us in, what are you talking about, Mint 15?
Yeah. Great show as always. Some update is needed even this week for Matt. Linux Mint being...
There was more than one.
Being that minty goodness had a lot more to it than cinnamon on top of Ubuntu. Because I said, bah, it's just cinnamon on Ubuntu.
Oh, that's what he said.
He's taking me to task for that. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then his other one was just, he was linking us to a review of Mint 14.
Yep. And then I think, did we get something from Brad?
Brad is talking about security and backdoors.
Yeah. And he's, the whole, and that's what started the German thing, which yes. I laugh, but anyway, but seriously though, he pointed out the Ken Thompson GCC hack.
If it was in GCC to add to a compiled program, you wouldn't notice it necessarily in GCC because it's not a backdoor in GCC, and then the compiled program, you wouldn't notice it because it'll all be compiling correctly, so the source code will be fine. And the
in theory
the possibility is there,
mm-hmm.
but possibility is a really really far stretch from probability,
right?
So and he said 99.1%,
mm-hmm.
and I said it's so the probability there is so far from the possibility there.
What was it point?
I said it was 99.99959 to. You know, 0.0001 chance that it's mm-hmm. there. So
yeah,
I mean, it is a it is a possibility, but it's really, really, really not a probability.
Well, as far as relying on
because
the functions of the GCC compiler now, I mean,
people look at the GCC code too, so it would have to be compiled into a pre-compiled GCC that you installed on your system,
mm-hmm.
so it would be more like the distro people you would be not trusting, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you would have to compile stuff from source, So those Gentoo people need to watch out.
All right. Okay, did we get any else?
I think that's just
about it. That's about it.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to ping that.
You know our link on for linuxlinks.com?
Yeah.
Actually, Steve emailed us himself and told us about it. So.
He did?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Steve.
Yeah, thank you very much. Okay. We got a ping back on our music, the 8-bit music, the song that we did. Did you guys see that?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No, I did not see that.
Yes. It was future music. So it was the music we used for the Father's Day episode, which was that kind of that cool little 8-bit. Remember that?
Well, we had an 8-bit last week.
Oh, did we? Okay.
But I'm trying to look back for that email.
Yeah. It came in, to go back up at the top here, July 9th. So, that's it.
I think that is it.
Featured music of the week.
Music?
What is the music? What is our outro music? Because I have no idea. Yeah. And I are just sitting...
As baloney. There's a conspiracy going on here.
No. No, actually, I haven't told you guys about it.
I wish there were. No, there isn't, though. Seriously, honestly, I'm serious when I say that.
Okay.
I have no idea.
This week music.
Because he said he took care of it already.
All right. I took care of it. I was listening to the Ubuntu UK podcast, and they had this guy on. They interviewed him, or one of the guys from this band or music group. I'm not sure what you would call them.
A band.
But it's
a band is a music group.
Well, it's the Intercontinental Music Lab.
Ooh, that sounds kind of interesting.
What it is it was people that used to get together in jam band like 10 years ago or more than that, and they've all moved away from each other, yet they got in contact again and says, we still want to jam or be creative. So what they did is one person would write a song and play one part. They would send it to the next person. They would add their track to it, send it to the next person, add their track, and then it ends up with these songs.
Well, now, my question, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but do they know ahead of time what the basic thing is, or does the second person listen to the first person and just say, oh, here's how I would... Okay.
Yeah, there's some coordination to it.
Because, like, the way Elton John and Bernie Taupin do it is kind of really interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie Taupin writes all the lyrics, and Elton John writes all the music. And Bernie Taupin just sends him lyrics and lyrics and lyrics and lyrics. And then Elton John will go through them and pick out one and put music to it.
Yeah.
Like Tiny Dancer.
Yeah.
He had the lyrics for Tiny Dancer for like 4 or 5 years before he finally put music to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Wow.
So.
Thanks, Matt. I'm going to be looking that up. No.
I think they put out an album.
They're a great collaborator.
That way called Two Rooms or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Because it's totally separate. He writes the lyrics and sends them off to them.
That's cool.
Wow.
It was a good interview.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on episode 20 of season 6. Well, this one I chose was called There Is Science in This Child. And I went through and listened to 3 or 4 of their songs. And they weren't exactly my liking of listening music.
Ooh,
so
maybe,
this one came out pretty good. but here we go.
Hello everybody, and welcome to the Crucible of Souls, where the universe unfurls under magical appliances in hands in latex gloves.
So I took a punt and asked you nuggets out to lunch. The smile is served a fizzing water, half-life in your cup, while I sat decaying at the table with my wine. And guided by your loving pit bull you made, a tiger's leap into this heart of mine.
Yeah! Grateful! Grateful!
14 years, smothering his buddy in paraffin wax. How are we to know which way he would go? There is science in this trial. Fourteen years greasing the Earth's invisible pig. Nothing draws a crowd like a hole in the ground. There is science in this quiet child. Won't you let me in to touch your ferro-faucet skin? Don't you want to know what's underneath this? Tender like red cotton. Light it is bewitching. There is something up my sleeve. The reaction is ungodly. The devil knows I've tried to believe. Everything will blow on New Year's Eve.
The universe is made of 14 fingers and 14 toes. For this I knew from Eddie search to be found. The properties of the penetrating radiation emitted by the alien and embodied by the eight particles of helium have been examined in the dark.
The flavors of the quark. Years living with the buzz of a cyclotron.
Those of all at home and have gone out to run with the child and his silence.
Yeah! 14 years living on the bed of a black stream.
Try to walk on white. They have filled up their minds with the child and his silence.
Yeah! Years living with a Chinese woman in my cupboard.
Terrible dials red as we lie asleep in bed. There is science in this violent child.
I wish to express my thanks to Mr. H. Nutt for his help in carrying out these experiments. And not forgetting Maxwell's gin, who held my hand and opened so many doors along the way. Thank you, Maxwell.
So, next week we have Kevin O'Brien on. We're going to talk about OLF.
Mm-hmm. O-L-F.
Mary's going to be gone.
Mary's not going to OLF. She's bailing on us.
I'm going to...
Just because it's her birthday, she's going on a freaking road trip.
I have a free trip. An all-expenses-paid trip to Washington, D.C. I'm going.
It's all right, Mary.
Yeah. Well, see, last
bail.
Year...
Just bail. Bail on us. Go ahead.
That particular trip was planned before I realized that they pushed OLF up 2 weeks. So, it used to be at the end of September, I think, for the most part.
Yeah. Well, it's moved around.
Because they got it, they moved around because of stuff that's going on at Ohio.
That,
the convention
there,
center.
That
university
that little
there.
Cowtown college that goes on. But yeah. So, something's going on at OSU later in...
Oh, it's probably a home game.
Right, so they have to move the... They move the analytics back.
Okay.
Cool. So, you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This has been episode 92.
Partly cloudy.
Unlike the way the current draft on the web page reads.
What does it say, cloudy partly?
Mostly cloudy. Mostly.
He'll be cleaned up
before he
flies.
Yeah.
That's funny.
This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying have a good week. See you next week.
So I guess we've got a unanimous, we're actually in agreement that we don't like this music.
But it's our outro music.
That's our music for this week.
But it's our outro music, damn it.
That's right.
And you won't listen to it. No, you won't listen to it. You can bypass
it. I won't listen to it.
There might be some outtakes at the end. But anyway, all right, well. I guess that's what we're going with.
Yeah, that's our music for this week.
All right.
And